We have talked for years about extraterrestrial contact. In a moment, Alan Steinfeld joins us. There's a book out called Making Contact. He wrote it. Is it different from all the other books? Let's find out when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Alan Steinfeld with us. He's an explorer of consciousness, and for more than 30 years, he has hosted and produced a weekly television series called New Realities in the city of New York. Additionally, 68,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel of the same name. There have been more than 20 million viewers who have seen his programs, and these include interviews with luminaries in the field of health, spirituality, UFOs such as Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Ram Dass, and just about every major UFO researcher in the field. He informs millions about human potential, remote viewing, the nature of alien contact, and has had years he has emceed the largest UFO event in the country called Contact in the Desert, which I go to annually. Alan, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, George, and thank you for all that you're doing for Making Contact. And actually, George wrote the foreword to the book, which is really a big plus for your fans and for the whole field that you've opened up. So I appreciate everything you've done.
Alan, very honored to be able to do that. It's a great book, and we're going to dive into it in a big way. Are you going to be at Contact in the Desert in June? It's going to be Zoom this year.
I'm going to be on there. I'm going to be interviewing some of the speakers. I'm going to be hosting some panels, and too bad we can't hang out in person, but it'll be back. It will be back.
It'll happen. I miss these days, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah. You know, Contact in the Desert is probably the funnest event. There's a feeling of love and companionship and mutuality. There's a real coming together of the UFO community and exchange of ideas, and I really do miss it. It's my favorite event.
By the way, your book is great. There are thousands of UFO books out there. You tell us what makes yours a little different.
Well, you know, everyone has their own idea about what's going on, and the truth is, and we'll get into what the government knows or doesn't know, I think we need kind of a collection of opinions. I mean, you do this every night, but to put people like Nick Pope, Linda Moulton Howe, Whitley Strieber, an essay by John Mack in there, an unpublished essay, and put them all in a sequence where they go from the external, the exoteric, like with Nick Pope, understanding why governments aren't telling us what's going on, to the internal conscious awareness of the situation, I've created a narrative of 11 different essays that go from the external to the internal. So I think that's different because I leave it up to the reader to form their own opinion. So I present them with all these possibilities, and like you know, because you've been doing this every night, no one has the whole truth. But what if we brought all these people together and they each had a piece of the elephant? And we put that together to see what this phenomena is really about. I think the reader starts to get a better understanding of the complexity, intricacies, and in a way, unfathomability of the UFO phenomena.
Absolutely. I look at it as a big puzzle, and all these players have a piece. You can't see the picture until everybody gets together and puts the pieces down.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you know what? The government, whatever's going to come out in June, the 180-day report, they're hedging their bets because they don't understand it. They don't know what to make of it. And that's what's been the confusion. That's what's been the wall of denial since 1947. How do you understand a phenomenon that doesn't make sense in the ordinary reality? And we can talk about which reality this really exists in.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, how did you get involved in this entire field?
Well, in the book, there's an essay by me. So there's, you know, well, we start from Nick, and we go to John Cameron, and I go from the researchers and investigators to the abductees and the experiencers. So I've fallen to the abductee category. But before I was even had that experience in 1987, I was obsessed with science fiction. I read Star Trek, I read A Wrinkle in Time, and I knew there was other levels of existence, other possibilities than just the mundane 9-to-5 general world people lived in. I always felt a little different than others, and I sought out different forms of entertainment. I read a lot of science fiction. I read so much that my sixth grade teacher said, "You can't read any more science fiction," which was traumatic for me because that was a world that was opening me up to new ideas. So I went into psychology, and then I wanted to be an astronaut, probably like a lot of people in the 60s. But I went on a cross-country trip with this girlfriend, and in one night in 1987, we felt as if we were in suspended animation through that night. We were frozen. It felt like frozen in time and space. And I woke up with a mark on the back of my leg, a little four-prong puncture mark. And I didn't think that much of it. I said, oh, that must be a spider bite or something. But, you know, it was on the back of my knee. It was strange, and you don't really look at that. So I was doing videos for somebody, and I did a dance video of her abductions. I said, what do you think of this mark? And she said, oh, that's an abduction mark. And then I just sort of panicked for a second. It was a bit of disbelief. Even though I was open to the idea, when it actually happened to me or felt like it happened to me, I just kind of felt disconnected. I felt a little traumatized. I said, really? And then I got to meet Bud Hopkins and some of the greats in the field, and I went to some of the intruder meetings, and I was convinced that, yes, this was an abduction mark, and I became obsessed with the subject. And you know, I've been to every single...
Oh, my God, yeah.
...conference. So I wanted to know everything I could about this reality, about what happened to me and hundreds of thousands of others. And you know what? I have not found a completely satisfactory answer. There is a mystery going on that's outside of our ability to cognize reality. And that's what the book's about, putting together the pieces so I can understand what happened to me and hundreds of thousands of other people, because no one has the answers.
Until I realized that you were part of many of the events I went to, I would see you at all these events, and I used to talk to Tom and say, who is this guy? This guy just loves UFOs. He's at every event. And then I started putting two and two together that in some cases you were part of the panel. Now you're at most events as a participant, aren't you?
I am. You know, I could not stay away from these conferences. I needed this information, whatever anybody was saying, no matter how far out or practical in a way, I needed to fill in the gaps in my reality so I could know that this is real. And then it took actually creating this book with 11 different writers to kind of ground my experience and say, yes, something happened to me, and I'm still not finished searching. I still want to understand who these beings are, how they think, and really what they are doing here with human civilization. I don't think we know that yet, but I have a couple of guesses that we'll talk about.
Since you've been doing this, have you checked into this bizarre COVID-19 bill where the government is supposed to, within 180 days, come forward with some kind of report on UFOs? It's the strangest thing I've ever seen, Alan.
It's so strange, and I don't think, first of all, they're going to come out with anything new. And another reason for that is that they don't know. They've been hedging their bets since 1947 with Roswell, where he said, yep, yes, there was a source. And so they are slowly revealing their ignorance, right? So they changed the tagline or the expression from UFO to UAP. Now, was that just a rebranding exercise because they didn't like UFOs, or were they trying to tell us something bigger, like this is not an object, this is a phenomena? And when we say phenomena, it somehow affects a wider field. It affects us personally.
So are you thinking we are probably going to be disappointed if and when they come out with this 180-day report?
I think there'll be a couple of new revelations, like the videos that we've been seeing. But, you know, you listen to Luis Alejandro, and he says, well, there are 13 different intelligence organizations, and they all have to get together and give their reports. And so I think we are going to be disappointed. I don't think we're going to get the truth until it becomes a citizens' movement, like all the and that's what's so great about your program, George. You're putting together a community, a worldwide community, where we can all stand up and say we want the truth. And my book was just released on May 4th, and we're calling May the 4th be with you. And we're and me and a bunch of people out in Sedona, where I was, are calling, making contact day May 4th. And this is going to be hopefully a national or international holiday. And that's how this gains momentum, bringing it to the people.
Well, it's a great book. It's a compilation of special stories that you had some incredible people. I'm going to buzz through their names again. You had Nick Pope, Grant Cameron, Dr. J.J. Hertak and Desiree Hertak, Linda Moulton Howe, Dr. John Mack, before he passed on, Whitley Strieber, Alan Steinfeld, you, Henrietta Weeks, Daryl Anka. Is he related to Paul Anka, the singer, by the way?
He actually is a cousin of Paul Anka.
How cool.
Your program?
Yeah. Okay. I think he was a long time ago.
He talks about his 38-year relationship with the extraterrestrial Bashar, which is a fascinating chapter.
And Mary Rodwell and then Caroline Corey. And you put together this compilation of people. And were they all excited about it, of course?
Well, they were excited because this is a chance for them to encapsulate what they know within, you know, 10 or 11 pages. And like I said, it goes from Nick, who's probably, he calls himself the villain in the book because he has the party line of the government and the reasons they're not revealing the UFO secrets because he worked for the Ministry of Defense.
But he's a believer. That's important.
He is a believer, and he talks about the hope that is possible when these things come forward. So he's a believer, and he's pushing for truth, except he's sworn to secrecy. So I say, Nick, tell us what you can't tell us. And then in the second chapter, Grant Cameron says in The Theory of Wow, if you've seen a UFO, it is not by accident. There is a link between your consciousness and these craft, and you are part of the whole phenomena. So anyone who's seen a UFO in your audience, this is not a chance sighting. You are involved. And this, according to Grant, is the biggest event to occur to human civilization. I really think it is. This is, and we're getting so close, George, to something.
It feels like we're getting close to something.
Exactly. We may not get the truth in June, but what we are getting is the feeling that a new day is dawning on planet Earth. This is something humanity has waited for, this awakening of the greater mind, that we are connected to the bigger picture, to the cosmos. So I'm out here in Arizona. Every night I go out and look at the stars, and I know I am part of all that we all are. Isn't that what fascinated you when you were young and growing up and being part of NICAP as a teenager?
I loved it. Loved it.
What's going on? It's a mystery, and it's easy to say there's a secret space program and all that. I'm not putting that down. But what is the mystery of these visitors, and what is the mystery of human beings ourselves? That's really what the book goes into, how ETs somehow make us more human. And that's the real story here. What is it that we are that needs to be expanded in the face of these other beings? How does our consciousness really seem to be non-local? And there's a whole quantum physics understanding to the phenomena that if you read through the ATIP papers, it says the phenomena is now quantum physics. And we can talk about what that means, you know, if you're that kind of catches your mind.
Of course, indeed. And what do you particularly believe personally about the field of UFOs?
You know, thanks for asking, because it's taken me 30-something years since 1987 to put together a picture. I believe these beings are not of our reality. So when I've been confronted by them, in dreams, my whole vibration has shifted. They are in this world, but not of this world. They come in and out of our time and space, and they vibrate at a different rate of frequency. So when you're in contact with them, you're shifted. You're shifted to an altered state of awareness because their minds operate, their consciousness operates at a different frequency. So the idea is we have to practice lucid awareness. We have to practice how to be in these other states of mind, other states of consciousness, in order to meet these beings on equal ground. And so they are here to help uplift us, to help bring us to the next level of our own consciousness, to show us what consciousness really is, because we don't know. We have this incredible instrument of the brain, and we don't know how to operate it. And yet, you know, I've been teaching remote viewing, and it seems that everyone has a natural facility to access non-local consciousness. I've learned this from Russell Targ. Russell Targ says, look for the signal, feel the signal, not the noise of the mind. And when I tell people that in these remote viewing classes, they get whatever target that I might be thinking of. So there's a quality of something else, of transcendence that we are a part of, that religion and politics and education and media, they don't talk about it. But yet these beings, whoever they are, whatever they are waking us up to this, that there's more to the human sentience than we've been told.
Are you convinced that possibly angels and stories in the Bible may have been misconstrued for UFO activity?
You know, that's a great question, but I do think there are angels, and they exist at a different frequency than ETs. I think some of the stories in the Bible may have actually been ETs, but I also think there are probably angels as well. There's like an infinite amount of frequency dials on a radio, and we can tune consciousness to any one of those, to see ETs, angels, we can go to the lower worlds, we can see people that have passed over. This is what we have to develop in the coming years, the science of mind and consciousness. So yeah, there people still call them angels whose belief systems are limited to just angels or demons, whatever you want to call them, but there are beings visiting us interdimensionally, beyond time and space, and from other worlds, I feel.
My daughter-in-law's sister drove up here from New Orleans, and along the trip, when she was doing it late night, she just scanned the dial, scanned AM, scanned FM, and there we are, popping up, popping up, popping up. And it's a little like UFO stories. They're everywhere these days.
Well, there's a lot going on, and this is why the government feels pressed to come forward. There's a lot more sightings, absolutely. Did you see the New York Times article on April 12th? New Yorkers are seeing more objects
yep.
in the sky, right? So, and then there's also a shift, I think, in the frequency of the planet. So more of these craft and these beings are coming to kind of visit, and I was just out with night vision goggles. You've seen them, right?
Well, with the late Ed Grimsley.
Yeah, Grimsley had them, but there were people out here that had them. We looked in the sky. There were about 40 of these objects just floating by with these night vision, and they weren't all satellites because sometimes you see these ships in
Well, they
tandem.
Would stop and make 90-degree turns.
I know, and if anyone, why doesn't the government look, why isn't the SETI project just look through night vision goggles?
I know, it's weird, isn't it?
We're like living in two different worlds. Like the scientists, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson, a smart guy, but he doesn't believe in UFOs. And I say, this is not about belief, Neil. This is about discovery. What are we discovering here? So, you know, the Rolling Stone magazine, New Yorker magazine, Forbes magazine is coming out with articles, more in the New York Times. This is an awakening of a greater consciousness, and people are talking about, and people are getting downloads. People are waking up with visitors in the middle of the night, people who would never suspect any of this any of this phenomena or somehow seeing these ETs interacting with them. So don't you think, George, that the veil between the dimensions is getting thinner?
Much thinner, Alan. We're going to come back and talk more about your book, Making Contact, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Alan Steinfeld with us, the book Making Contact. Let's dive into the book, Alan. What were some of the fascinating stories of the many we just mentioned?
Well, I would say John Mack. He, even though he died, what is it, 20 years ago, what he wrote that was never published, it was a talk that he gave but never published, is still relevant today. He is a central figure in okaying and saying that people having these contact abduction experiences are not crazy. They having legitimate experiences, and he talked about why and what's going on. I just want to read a quote that I use in the book from John Mack and this paper. He says, "We're dealing with a phenomena which violates our sense of reality and which operates in the gray area between the physical world and the subjective world. And we are being asked to prove this by methods of physical science alone. But those methods, in my view, will not yield its secrets until we discover other ways of knowing." That was a key to me. What did he mean by other ways of knowing? You have any guesses, George?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, I think he means, because his second book was called Passport to the Cosmos, where he talks to indigenous people and he talks about their ways of understanding this phenomena. And I think these other ways of knowing are more right brain, more shamanic, more in terms of consciousness. We have to get out of the linear understanding that reality is a certain way. It's not rational reality, as we know rationale to be. It is not linear, because you can have an experience that happened maybe 20 years ago. It's still very current in your mind. So what is it? It is consciousness. We need to understand the phenomena, whatever this phenomena is, in terms of consciousness and going from objective reality to a subjective reality, which is what quantum physics does. It says it all depends on the viewer. And I think if we can look at the phenomena from a quantum physics point of view, we'll get closer to understanding what this is really about.
Absolutely. And how come nobody picked up on John Mack's speech before?
Well, it was on his archives. I knew his archivist. It was an essay. It was an audible thing. And I talked to his archivist. I said, I just love what John is saying here. It was all about worldviews. He talks to an abductee. I don't know. Maybe people thought he wasn't relevant anymore. I think he's so relevant and probably the most important figure in our field, still, even 20 years after his death, he still has a huge place. And he's going to have more of a place as the government comes forward and says, not only are there ships, but there's beings in these ships, and these beings have taken other humans to experiment on. And when that comes out, and that's what they're not wanting to tell us, because when that comes out, That some people said there'll be class action suits. I don't know about that, but what the government's giving us now is saying, oh, it all sort of started in 2004 with the Nimitz. Well, this is a huge history, and it has to do with consciousness. It has to do with the interactions of human beings. But they're not ready to go there, but we are, George.
Well, we're not going to give up, and it sounds like you're not either.
No, there's so much to this. Is the most fascinating thing, and I think it's so rewarding to be involved in talking to people who've had experiences. We're trying to piece together sort of the mystery of existence here, and I know that's what inspired you to do your radio program when you first started. What's going on here, right, George?
Absolutely. There's no question about that. I'm constantly baffled at how so many people do not believe that there are extraterrestrials out there, or that we may be the only ones in the universe. And when you just look at just everything's the same, I mean, there's star systems, solar systems, planets. All you have to do is find the right kind of planet, and you're going to have life.
I think life is an emergent property of creation. I think it's everywhere. Look, grass grows between the sidewalks in New York City. It's life wants to thrive, and it's here. We are not a freak of nature, and when we realize that, that turns the whole UFO ET question around, saying we're a part of something bigger. We're not separate from that. And so that's the threshold we are at. And yeah, like you say, I can't believe people don't believe it either, especially when the Navy comes out, as it did a few months ago, and say, yes, UFOs are real. Come on. Why don't – because you know why they don't believe it? Because it's not – doesn't fit into their belief system, into their worldview. If they include UFOs, it means everything that they heard before is on shaky ground. And you know – reality is more solid than the ground beneath people's feet. And when that changes, they have to shift their identity of who they think they are. And that's the problem here.
What about the possibilities of multiple universes, other dimensions, that these beings could be coming from there?
It is so infinite, the possibility of life. Absolutely. In the chapter 3 of the book, J.J. and Desiree Hertok talk about the interdimensional beings, the ultra-celestials and the ultra-terrestrials. There are beings on higher dimension. There is so much life. It doesn't have to be physical protoplasm. There's life and consciousness on so many levels. And you know what? Our brains, our awareness has a facility to be aware of that, to be conscious of that. And that's what we have to develop. And that's really the subtext of this book. How do we become more aware to interact and make contact with the rest of the universe? You see, I was saying making contact is an inside job. It starts with us expanding the possibility of who we are as human beings. And when we do that, I think the universe becomes alive.
Do you know if John Mack was ridiculed by his peers?
Absolutely. You should interview Ralph Blumenthal. He just wrote a book about John Mack, a whole life story. And it's quite a fascinating read. John Mack was he was almost thrown out of Harvard because he said, I believe these people are having abductions. Harvard said, you can't say that. You know, there's a quote that John used to say about someone talking about ghosts, and he went to see this seance, and he came back saying, I think these ghosts are real, he said to these researchers. And they said to him, we don't care if it's real, we still don't believe it. So that's where we're at in this UFO situation. We need a new generation who's been brought up with the idea that there's something out there, and we're part of it, and there's a bigger mystery and history going on.
Realistically, Alan, how do you think people will react if government came out and fully disclosed relationship with ETs?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people really stuck in a kind of fundamentalist, whatever that fundamentalism is, belief system. But a lot of people will be relieved. And you know what? It's going to be a renaissance. When it really comes out that we're not alone in the universe, I think the arts, the creative action, the new stories that will unfold will take a whole different turn. We need a new story for humanity. And I think UFOs and the environment are key into creating a new avenue for who we are. So I think people will rejoice. Finally, we're getting the truth. Who are these people in government anyway that think they're entitled to understanding a truth that the rest of the people aren't allowed to hear? I mean, that's a sort of hierarchy that doesn't really work in government. And I think this is what we're getting close to, and this is what those people who've kept this secret for over 75 years are afraid of. They're afraid of letting out the truth because that implies a lot more than UFOs.
Well, and the Catholic Church, I think, has rightfully said, your belief in God or belief in UFOs does not negate your belief in God.
Right. I mean, UFOs essentially have nothing to do with belief. I mean, really, either they're here or they're not here. What is that? I mean, I don't know, when people say, do you believe in UFOs? It's like, let's look at the facts. Let's look at what the government has already said, even though they have not come out with the truth. Let's look at what they've admitted just in the past year. That's enough for me, and a lot of people say that's disclosure. We have had disclosure, December 16th, 2017, front page of the New York Times, UFOs, secret investigations by the Senate. That, for me, is enough to turn the tides. But what we're needing now is confirmation. You've heard that. When they roll out the crash retrieval ships and the ET bodies, which I'm sure they have at Area 51 and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, they are waiting on this stuff for the right time when people will be able to accept it. And I think we're really close to that.
We're with Alan Steinfeld. His book is called Making Contact. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com as we are talking about the incredible possibilities that could be out there. Ken Arnold, 1947, saw a whole bunch of strange craft. Wouldn't you have loved to have talked to him?
Yes. No, he was a revolutionary pioneer, and that started the wave. June 24th, which, interesting enough, is when the COVID relief bill disclosure is supposed to happen. June 24th. Isn't that interesting? 1947, Kenneth Arnold saw these saucers skipping over Mount Rainier, heading south. And he coined a phenomenon that we are now at the other end of. We really are. So it began then. I mean, of course, it existed for hundreds of years.
Well, and ironically, a month later, the crash at Roswell.
Exactly. There was something about that time. It was after World War II. There was a different frequency. And I think this is a sort of frequency-specific event. As that frequency, as we came out of that war, this phenomena was starting to awaken people to another reality. Just like the last year of quarantine, that was a shift in reality. And as we start to come out of it, something new seems to be looming on the horizon. Isn't that strange?
Absolutely, indeed. What drives you, Alan? Why do you keep at this?
Because we have yet to solve the problem. Even when the government comes out and, let's say, they throw up their hands and say, we don't know what's happening, there's something about the mystery of creation and the mystery of who each of us are, you, me, everyone listening. What is this thing inside of us that animates this body? How are we connected to the rest of creation? What is this mind we have that we can send thoughts to each other, telepathy? We have that power. What drives me is the possibility of what the human being really is, and that's exciting.
We're going to take calls next hour with Alan as we talk about his work, Making Contact. Where do people get your book?
Well, hopefully at every bookstore in America, but they can go to Amazon, too. It's actually number one in new releases under UFOs, and they can go to Amazon.com, look at Making Contact, Alan Steinfeld. There's an audio version of it, which, thank you, George, for reading your piece.
Well, that was fun. I'd like that.
It was great. It's a great way to set the tone of that book, because you are a leader in this field. Every night, you're at it. What drives me? What drives you, George, right?
I got to tell you, when I was 19, I was obsessed with UFOs. And then when I became a reporter at 21, my first interview was with Stanton Friedman, God rest his soul. And I haven't stopped since, Alan. I can't stop. I'm obsessed with it.
I'm obsessed, too, because there's a mystery here that's way beyond beings from other worlds. I mean, that's part of it, but there's something bigger that involves all of us, and I don't know what that is, but it drives me as well to understand the nature of reality. That's why I've called my program on Manhattan Cable New Realities for the past 25 years.
And, you know, as you know, we've put together a great team here. One of my hosts, George Knapp, is by far... he is the best UFO reporter I think there is out there. I mean, the guy's just incredible.
Everyone you have that are doing it nightly are so important to inform a public, and your audience just keeps growing. So people are thirsty for the truth. And I'm really happy to have created this book that puts together some of the pieces from all these different researchers. So I've created a narrative, in a sense.
They're all great, too.
I know. So this is, if you want to go, what makes this book different than all the others? In one place, you, a reader, can find the story of the phenomena, from the nuts and bolts to the internal integration of what consciousness is with these other beings. Carolyn Corey in the last chapter talks about her merging with these ET consciousnesses, and that might be our destiny.
Yeah, could we? It could very well be. What could go wrong, Alan?
Well, they could be what everyone feared, of course. They're here to take over. I mean, I don't agree with David Jacobs, though, that he says, yeah, they're just here to take over our planet.
Yeah, he's not happy about them, that's for sure.
I know, but, you know, people project what they already fear of the known onto the unknown. What we're dealing with is an unknown. What could go wrong? I wouldn't say wrong, but what could be is that this is beyond our imagination, that maybe these are not really aliens. Maybe these are not anything we have yet to cognize. This is something Grant Cameron talks about sometimes. Maybe we're just calling them aliens because we don't have a name for this mysterious paranormal presence that goes through time and space. But this is where we're at now. So let's call them aliens, ET, time travelers. So what could come wrong is that humanity needs to wake up, and those that don't wake up will be in shock when they finally, you know, arrive. And they are arriving in greater numbers, whatever that is. They're here, and they're coming, and they're about to, some people have a rude awakening into the possibility that there's something more to the universe.
Will it scare the living daylights out of them once they realize we're being visited?
You know, I quote Joe Dispenza in this book, and he says, the subtitle of the book is Preparing for the New Realities of Extraterrestrial Existence. And he says knowledge empowers people for preparation. So with this book, with knowledge of that, there are these other beings, and that if we know there's more to reality than what's been told to us previously, then we will be prepared to meet the unknown. Some people will freak out because they're living in such a small world. Not if they listen to your radio show, but most people, if, you know, if they're just sitting in front of their normal television going 9 to 5 and they don't think about anything else, those people are going to be shocked, and maybe it won't even mean anything. You know, when Copernicus found that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe, you know, the serfs went about farming, but for the people of science, for the people who could imagine a greater possibility, it opened up a whole field of perception, and that began our understanding of a greater universe. And that's what I think excites us so much, is that there's a discovery to be made in all this phenomena, and it's right here. It's right at the tip.
It's right under our nose. Alan, we're going to come back and take an hour of phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.